Spillwords.com presents An Unexpected Lie, written by James Nelly. The city of Little Rock was normally quiet and laid back, but today the most populous city in Arkansas nestled along the south bank of the Arkansas River, and the county seat of Pulaski County was in the final 2 days of the Diamond Invitational Golf Tournament. It was the Rose City's yearly opportunity to enter the national spotlight, and it created an exciting atmosphere for everyone. Everyone except Emmett Aiken. The argument between Toby and his uncle Emmett began late Saturday afternoon at the Black and Bean restaurant in downtown Little Rock and continued into the kitchen of Toby Reeves' small red brick home just north of the Riverwalk on Euclid Street. Toby and Emmett walked up the exposed aggregate concrete walkway at Toby's house onto a raised wooden porch that stretched all along the full length of the front outside wall. A front door in the middle of the porch was guarded by an always unlocked screen door that opened into an undersized but orderly living room. The damp kitchen, located at the back of the house, smelled of burnt coffee and last night's fried chicken dinner. The smell permeated every room. Emmett and Toby took seats at a small round oak table in the kitchen and continued their latest discussion. The dispute between Toby and Emmett was nothing new. Emmett believed that every decision should have a purpose, and along with a purpose, there must be logic. Toby believed every decision should benefit the greater good, regardless of the logic. These competing beliefs had erupted into some very spirited social and political discussions, but Emmett was just louder and more upset today. The latest world golf rankings had just been released, and the golfer Daniel Mancini, Dimmy, as the media referred to him, was ranked number 7 in the world. Emmett couldn't believe or accept it, and he did not attempt to hide his feelings. As one of the senior maintenance managers of the Little Rock National Golf Club, he wanted no part of a golfer accused of being a cheater and thief playing on his course. In 2016, Emmett retired from the Army as a Special Forces captain before taking a management job at the Little Rock National Golf Club. During his time in the Army, he had seen firsthand the many human and economic atrocities in Africa, the Middle East, and Eastern Europe. Because of those experiences, his feeling for cheaters and thieves evolved from dislike to revulsion, and he was not shy about sharing his feelings with anyone who would listen. He considered the presence of Daniel Mancini at the Diamond Invitational a shameful action just as real as the disgraceful events he had seen in the Army and later in his personal life. "Do you want a beer?" asked Toby, rising from his chair and pointing toward the refrigerator. "No, not tonight. I have to go back to the course after the end of the third round tonight and supervise a double cross cut of the 15th green. If you have a sweet tea, I'll take that," answered Emmett. Toby opened a beer for himself, handed Emmett a glass of sweet tea, and sat back down at the kitchen table. "A cheater and a thief can't be the number 7 ranked golfer in the world," argued an already frustrated Emmett. Mancini's case is still open concerning the cheating scandal. "Nothing has been proven, Emmett. The charges are only allegations. Besides, Mancini is beating everyone on the European tour. That's why he got invited to the Diamond Invitational," emphasized Toby. "That shouldn't matter. There should be some kind of moral test for all competitors. If the Diamond Invitational committee did that, half the field might be ruled out. These players are competing for themselves, their fans, and the honor of winning a prestigious tournament. I know that, but you can't keep criminal allegations totally out of this tournament, Toby. There have been too many criminal incidents in the world without any consequences. A line must be drawn somewhere," proclaimed a more frustrated Emmett. "You can't punish the athletes for any present or past allegations that haven't been proven, Emmett. If we did, we'd have to eliminate the golfers from countries like China, South Africa, Venezuela, Germany, Vietnam, Africa, and even America. Where does it end? I don't know where it ends, but an example has to be made somewhere. Maybe someone will step up and show the world a moral compass," Emmett announced in a threatening tone. "What do you mean? I've got to go. After I'm done with the 15th green maintenance tonight, I'll save you your normal seat at the top of the bleachers behind the 15th tee. Be at the course tomorrow," commanded Emmett as he hurried through the living room. "Thanks, Emmett. Try to enjoy the final round tomorrow. You and your staff have done a great job preparing the course. Don't let the Mancini issue get to you." "Mancini won't get to me, Toby. I've already decided what to do," Emmett said as he swung open the screen door and hustled down the concrete path. Early in the final round on Sunday, Toby bought a pimento cheese sandwich at the course concession stand and walked to the 15th tee bleachers. Toby took the seat that a Little Rock National member friend of Emmett had saved for him at the corner on the top row of the bleachers behind the 15th tee. Top row bleacher seats were reserved for members and their guests. These seats were the most desirable vantage point to watch the tee shots to the treacherous 158-yard par 3 15th hole nicknamed Daisy Bell. From his seat, Toby could also see all the action on the 14th fairway and green and the 16th tee. These three holes were known as Coffin Corner. Toby had read that the Coffin Corner name was coined by sportswriter Herbert Warren in a 1961 issue of Sports Illustrated. Warren was inspired by a jazz song recorded in 1938 called Walking the Coffin Corner. The name stuck. From that day forward, Coffin Corner has been known as one of the most recognizable and famous 12-stroke 1,205-yard death traps in golf. No one at Little Rock National was aware of how literal that description may turn out to be. Toby had a magnificent view straight down the 15th hole with the iconic Monarch Bridge crossing Dillon's Creek on his left commemorating Jeffrey Monarch's win in 1963, and the Sullivan Bridge crossing Dillon's Creek near the 16th tee commemorating Patrick Sullivan's hole in one in 1948 win. All the golfers had to cross these two bridges as they made their way around Coffin Corner. The 15th green is narrow with a bunker long and short of it, with swirling winds that can cause havoc with misplayed shots. Disasters at this hole have a permanent place in Diamond Invitational history. Greg Tellings in 1976. Edward Miller in 2004. Turner Hudson and other contenders in 2012. Each watched their Diamond Invitational dreams drown in Dillon's Creek in front of the 15th green. Every player understood that he couldn't win the Diamond Invitational on the 15th hole, but he certainly could lose it there. The pin today was in its traditional Sunday placement. It was tucked on the front right side of the green, bringing Dillon's Creek and the short bunker more into play. The Sunday weather at Little Rock National was near perfect. It was sunny, 69 degrees, and light winds. Toby watched all the groups come through Coffin Corner. The 15th hole was playing much harder than the weather would indicate. The swirling winds off the 14th green and the fast-putting surface, possibly influenced by Emmett's overnight double crosscut, were taking their toll. The tournament leaders, Stuart Bennington and Daniel Mancini, were coming to the 15th tee when Toby first spotted Emmett in his Little Rock National green hard hat at the bottom of the bleachers directly below where Toby was sitting. Toby saw that Emmett was carrying some kind of small device with an antenna in his right hand. He also had an earpiece in his left ear. This wasn't unusual as the maintenance managers were always in close contact with tournament officials in case they were needed to rectify a problem on the course. "Emmett," said Toby in a quiet voice while leaning over the bleacher railing. No reaction. "Emmett," said Toby in a little louder voice. Emmett looked up and gave Toby a look he had never seen before. It was menacing and haunting. Emmett quickly glanced away and disappeared under the bleachers. "What's going on?" Toby thought. But his attention quickly turned back to the 15th tee when the appreciative applause of the Diamond Invitational patrons grew to a crescendo for the two arriving tournament leaders. The applause paused as the players reached the tee. Mancini was the first to play. He confidently selected an 8-iron and hit a towering shot over the right side of the front bunker with a slight fade. The ball landed, released, and rolled to a stop 6 feet from the pin. He had an excellent birdie try and an opportunity to take his first historic lead in the diamond. Bennington also chose an 8-iron, but he pulled it to the left side of the green 35 feet from the hole. He had a tricky 2-putt left for par. Coffin Corner was making its presence known again. Mancini was the first to leave the tee box and walk toward the Monarch Bridge that led to the 15th green. After conferring with his caddy and waving his appreciation to the patrons, Bennington followed a minute later. Trailing closely behind Bennington were the four police officers that accompanied this golf pairing for the players' safety. Applause followed the golfers all the way to the bridge. As Mancini had done the prior three rounds, he walked quickly onto the Monarch Bridge well ahead of his caddy, stopped alone at the top of the bridge, turned toward the patrons in the 15th tee bleachers, and broke into a big smile. The applause intensified and Mancini's smile widened as he pulled off his cap and raised both hands above his head. Suddenly, Toby saw all four police officers yelling at each other and running toward the bridge with their guns drawn. Simultaneously, Mancini's smile disappeared, and he instinctively dropped to his knees and covered his head. The applause stopped and was replaced by gasps. The massive explosion at the Monarch Bridge was heard all over the golf course. Pieces of the bridge were landing everywhere, even as far back as the bleachers behind the 15th tee. Flying debris and smoke from the explosion made it difficult for Toby to see what had happened. Patrons were running from the bleachers. Most just ran wherever they could out of sheer panic. It was chaos. Toby stayed in his top row bleacher seat until he could see the outline of the 15th green. What he saw was horrifying and surreal. All four of the police officers and Mancini's caddy were dazed but moving on the grass of the 15th fairway just below Dillon's Creek. Because Bennington and his caddy had lagged behind Mancini, they were sitting at the edge of the 14th fairway yelling for help. The Monarch Bridge was gone, totally gone. There was no sign of Mancini. He had vanished with the bridge. Toby turned and looked back up the adjacent 14th fairway. That's when he saw Emmett in his familiar green hard hat calmly walking back toward the parking lot. Toby stood up and yelled as loud as he could toward Emmett. "Emmett, it's Toby. I need your help. What did you do? You've ruined everything." Emmett kept walking, dropped the small device with the antenna from his hand, and never looked back. Please leave this field empty, never miss a story. Subscribe to our newsletter and get the latest literary buzz. Email address asterisk. We don't spam. Read our privacy policy for more info. Check your inbox or spam folder to confirm your subscription. About latest posts, James Nelly. James Nelly is a retired business executive and the author of the flash fiction story, The Timely Death of Peter Usher. He was born in Illinois and has learned that you never know how strong and creative you are until it's the only option. He attended the University of Illinois, where he received a degree in economics, and then to graduate school at Northwestern University, where he received his MBA in finance and international business. His travels have taken him to many areas of the world. These travels have served as a basis for many of his stories. Writing fiction has been a passion for him, and in recent years his writing has specialized in murder mystery novels and poignant short stories that elicit emotional and thoughtful responses. His short stories have been published in a variety of publications. He and his wife live in Southern California, along with a lifetime collection of books. Latest posts by James Nelly. See All, An Unexpected Lie. October 12, 2024 Spotlight on Writers. James Nelly. September 14, 2024 Benjamin's Lure. July 4, 2024